Is it a problem having to take the initiative on your own without having someone tee it up for you, you fucking sorcerer? You amateur, well, you lazy piece of trash.
You know, I'm just used to being able to pull it all off together with no prep work and no time. So, you know, I really do kind of my best work on the edge with no support and no infrastructure. And if you're a patron, head over there because we're going to be hanging out in the After Show for another 30 to 40 minutes. And that'll be fun, probably, unless I keep getting bullied for being naturally talented and able to spit fire from my mouth. I think that's everything. So until next time, I've been Red.
Get out of my library.
Cool. Teleports away. Let me know when you figure this one out, wizard boy. And this has been an Only Sarcastic Podcast.
This one in your books, dumbass. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. I am Blue, and I'm joined by Red.
I don't remember what's in this tea. What's in the tea?
It's a ginger tea with honey.
Right. I'm drinking ginger tea with honey this week.
Yeah. We're doing this podcast in person, coming off of PAX East, which was super fun.
Yeah.
Thank you to everybody who showed up for our meet and greet, took pictures, asked fun questions for a little Q&A. it was truly so much goddamn fun to see all of you.
We were like, oh, our thing's at 6. We'll go there in like a little bit after 5:30, you know, get set up, wait for people to show up. And we look in the room and it's full. And I was like, those guys could be here for anybody.
Yeah, we walked in and joked, like, you guys could be here for anyone.
Well, I was legitimately, like, the room's normally, like, empty in this little period of time. This isn't a con that has a ton of, like, places to chill out or, like, hang with your friends. Because we'd had a little, like, rest earlier, and we were like, where the fuck can we sit down that isn't just, like, the floor?
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe people are just hanging out in here. And then, like, a couple people at the tables nearby were like, wow, way to enter with, like, no pomp or circumstance. And I was like, oh, you are here for us. Shit.
So then we started joking, like, it's not 6 p.m. yet. We're not on the clock. Chill, chill.
It was very, very cute. And man, so much fun. I've gotten really good at drawing little guys when people are like, sign this. And I'm like, yes, okay, this is a book of Norse myths. You're getting a little winking Odin. This is Journey to the West. I'll try and draw you a full monkey.
I signed Bull Demon King for the win, sign Blue.
How dare you, sir.
Yeah. No, it was so great. Truly such a joy. Everyone was so nice. It was so much fun to see everybody. We've got videos that we got to talk about as well. So we're recording this a little bit out of order because the OSP gang is heading up to see the eclipse next week, which is super duper exciting.
Which at time of release, I think we'll have.
It's happening next week, but our schedule's kind of a nightmare for the next little week and a bit, so we're recording this out of order.
Yeah.
My video on the good, not good, Mr. Snorri Sturluson has not gone up yet.
Nope.
Last week was, Red, your trope talk on noodle incidents. You want to start with that one?
Oh, man, sure. Such a fun time. And I'm really glad that everyone in the comments was like, oh, yeah, hey, wait a second. well, almost everybody, except for the people who were going, ah, yes, the jockstrap incident, which is... It's a Dragon Ball abridged joke that I almost brought up in the video, but I was like, no, that's too on the nose. It's simply too pure of an invocation of the noodle incident. Sometimes you gotta keep things a little bit messy.
Yeah.
man, that video did really well.
It did really well. People loved it.
Yeah, I guess Calvin and Hobbes on the thumbnail, and everyone's like, yes, mine.
It's the kind of trope talk that rewires your brain a little bit after you see it because you start noticing it everywhere.
True.
It's on par with the trope talk on Prison Breaks where you explain the the unspoken plan rule.
Right. Yeah.
Which made watching Andor a lot less stressful for me.
Yeah. As soon as it became clear that they'd already made the plan, I was like, great, they're getting out of here.
Oh, we're
today.
Good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Space Florida. Oh no.
Oh no.
Yeah. But I think it was a similar caliber of that video where you see the trope talk and you just learn something foundational about the way stories work. In this case, it is not just the existence of the noodle incident, but what that means on a storytelling level about the dangerous dance of concealing information deliberately and not giving the audience everything they might be asking for. It's a really interesting... a really interesting angle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question to answer. Like, what parts of the story need to be shown and what parts are better left unsaid? And I think that especially when you're adapting an older story or when you are, like, a new writer joining onto an older property, it can be tempting to be like, the fans want to know what this unanswered question really meant. And it's like, do they actually want that? Or do they just say that on Reddit? Like, you gotta distinguish between those two things. It's very important. And I remember I had this little aha moment when I was working on the script, because of course there's a little kind of tangent in the middle about like some things start off as noodle incidents and then turn out to not be noodle incidents because they get explained. And I was like, I don't know if this really counts, but I was like, no, this does count, because similar to like the Last of Their Kind plotline, where it's like a character still has a Last of Their Kind arc, even if they then find more people like them, you know, a noodle incident is still a noodle incident until it is explained. One of the examples that a few people in the comments were like, yes, I'm glad you mentioned it, was in the 2017 DuckTales remake, where there's the very first episode, one of the characters is like, this is the Spear of Selene all over again. It's like, I was not responsible for the Spear of Selene. Textbook noodle incident format. Spear of Selene is a foundational plot point for the entire first season and some of the second. And it starts off as like, this is Budapest all over again. And then it's like, hey, they're actually referencing a profound tragedy that has shaped the lives of absolutely everybody in this show. Have fun figuring that shit out.
Yeah.
So good. And that was one of the ones where like, it washes over you on a first watch. You're not like, oh, I wonder what they mean by the Spear of Selene. You're like, yeah, it's Budapest all over again. And then you rewatch it and you're like, they brought that shit up in the first episode. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun. And then I had that aha moment when I was like, hey, this is why Solo didn't play well with anybody.
Yeah.
Cause,
that was a great little dive.
Yeah, I'm glad. Because I'm a firm Solo defender for the most part. I had a good time with it. I thought the guy who played young Han Solo had almost all the vibes down.
Alden Ehrenreich did great.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry,
also
what?
Speed Racer. He's also Speed Racer.
Oh,
he
really?
Is? Oh.
Wow. So him being like, I'm such a good pilot. Let me pilot this vehicle really well. It was just, so the boy's getting typecast. But I liked that movie more than I probably should have. I thought it was cute. I thought everybody had a good time. And I was kind of bummed out when Disney balked after it, because it didn't do gangbusters and a lot of people just didn't bother to see it because they were like, I already know exactly what's going to happen in this movie. I could make a fucking checklist out of it. Oh, let me guess. He's going to at one point shoot first. Cool. Yeah, so my favorite little anecdote when I was telling my parents about when I was working on this script, I mentioned that in Solo we see Chewie rip a guy's arms off, and my mom got really indignant. Like, we shouldn't need to see that. And like, I thought the implication was that Han was just lying to threaten them, and I was like, yeah, see, you get it. We shouldn't have seen the time Chewie ripped a guy's arms off. But they keep doing that. I think they did it in the sequel trilogy at least once too.
I have to offer a correction. I was confusing my white guys with similar haircuts. It's Alden and Rich. Ehrenreich.
So you're telling me that it's not Speed Racer.
It's not Speed Racer, is what I'm saying.
Wait, who's Speed Racer?
Emil Hirsch.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
if you
I
look
see.
Them up,
got
they
it.
Look incredibly similar.
Got it.
I don't know about that. That's okay. Yeah. Well, cool. All right. Net zero
well,
information.
Not in costume, but they are just net white guys with flowy-ish hair.
Indigo uses any excuse to talk about Speed Racer, starts falsifying casting information.
Transparent.
Wow.
Come on. Anyway. But yeah, I don't know. The thing is, I enjoyed that movie when I saw it. I was like, yeah, we got to see the Kessel Run, which is fine. We got to see a pretty good train heist, and Han meets Chewie and hangs out with
heist.
These cool people. That's fine. Oh, we get to see Han bankrolling the rebellion. All right, that's fine. Han shot first. That's cool. It's fine. Han got his gun and his jacket. That's fine. Han got his last name. That's fine.
Han got Ellis Islanded.
Yeah. And that's just like, I don't know. I don't think that part needed to be explained. I don't think we were clamoring for, like, plot hole ding, you're telling me this loner's last name is Solo on his fucking birth certificate? How dare you? What are the odds? It's like, what are the odds that the guy who goes to space has the last name Skywalker? Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Anyway.
George Lucas is like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
Fight me.
Yeah. Yes, my protagonist's name is Luke S. Fucking deal with it. Anyway, I feel like Solo was solving a lot of problems that didn't exist.
Yeah.
And the main one was the fans must be clamoring for explanations for all these things that we said but then didn't explain. It's like, the fans are not clamoring for that, man.
Yeah. As far as Star Wars noodle incidents, the one that I think I first glommed onto of like, oh, this is interesting, was at the beginning of episode 3 where Anakin's like, oh man, this is the 10th time I've saved your ass, and Obi-Wan's like, 9th time, that business on Cato Demodia doesn't doesn't count. Uh-huh. It means nothing.
Yep.
It's pretty weak dialogue, all things considered, but it tells this interesting little character tidbit that Anakin is always saving Obi-Wan's ass, and he's got a little bit of like a sore spot about one of them. Uh-huh. That's fun. Uh-huh.
And what it crucially does is it fills that gap between the second and third movies, yeah, by being like, these guys are bros. They're buds. They've been having adventures. They've, yeah, been saving each other's lives. Like, would have been nice to see that, but that's what Clone Wars was for. Yeah. You know, we got that. It was fine. And I saw someone in the comments actually point out, like, the first Star Wars noodle incident that was then explained
is the Clone Wars.
You fought in the Clone Wars? Could have just been a whatever. It's just a space, like, oh, the X Wars? What's a good space-related variable to substitute into X? Clones. You fought in the Clone Wars? Could have been the Droid Wars. Could have been the Spice Wars. It doesn't matter. But, like, that turned into the entire plot of the prequels, basically. Yeah. And then the cartoon, and then the other cartoon, and the movie that people don't like. And it's a whole bunch of things. And it's so interesting to me, because there is an art to not giving the audience information. And it's very clear that a lot of, like, stories use it pretty clumsily, where it's like, I'm doing the mystery box form of writing, which is a nice way of saying I don't know what I'm doing. Like, literally, I do not know what I am doing with the story when I am doing it, and I just kind of hope it comes together into a satisfying resolution because I don't have one in mind. And it's like, that's probably not a part of the story that you should leave ambiguous, since it's the entire point of the story to figure it out. Like, that feels bad. But then at the same time, it's like, fans are clamoring to know how Nick Fury lost his eye, and it's like, no, they're not. Stop listening to those guys.
Get on Reddit.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a fun trope talk that people clearly really enjoyed.
Hmm.
There's a lot of fun stuff that could be unpacked, of like going through like top 10 noodle incidents.
Yeah.
Number 7 will spill noodles on you.
Number 7 will confuse you.
Yeah, but it's the kind of thing where it gives the audience new eyes to, mm-hmm, go out and see stories doing this and be like, oh, I know what you're on about.
Yep. Also, I really appreciate the... I appreciate the person in the comments who was like, man, props to Red for making this whole video about a dialogue-based trope that does not have a visual component. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for noticing. It was so hard.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I did the best.
I saw the examples you're using. I'm like, oh, yeah, no, this makes sense. And I didn't think to recognize, like, oh, yeah. Okay. How do you represent that?
Because if I draw the noodle incident, it ceases to be a noodle incident.
Yeah. I like the one frame where it was the author saying, and then Calvin made a big mess, asterisk, this is not actually what the noodle incident is in canon.
I didn't want to get people complaining about spoilers in the comments.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I had a really good time with it. Also, it sparked me rereading all of Calvin and Hobbes. I'm not quite done, but I'm almost done. And it's like, oh, wow, that's a solid 30% of my personality right there. That's cool. Always fun to unearth that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. And on your end of things...
A nightmare.
possibly more chaos, if it's possible. What the fuck was that sentence?
I don't know how this video ended up taking the shape that it did. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy with how it turned out. But I really wanted to go in with a detailed analysis of the cultural history of Iceland, mm-hmm, talk about their poets, talk about Skaldic poetry, what social factors led them to becoming the best storytellers in Scandinavia, talking about how we got the myth that we did, surviving through post-Christianization and dealing, mm-hmm, with very interesting facts that, like, we can date the Völuspá to the 900s based on phonetic compositions that would have been phased out because of a vowel shift. At the turn of the millennium. So historians and philologists are like, yeah, we can actually, like, specifically date this to, like, with modern scholarship, around the time of this one volcanic eruption in, like, the 960s.
Yeah.
At least during the reign of this one Norwegian king. It's like, shit. That's really cool. I didn't get to talk about too much of that because Snorri Sturluson is a fucking madman.
Snorri Sturluson should thank his lucky stars that the prose Edda is the thing he's known for.
Yeah, exactly. And I tried to convey that in the video because I truly did not want to have to talk about politics, but I needed to get the context of why this man?
Yeah.
Why are we stuck with this guy? And unfortunately, his political backstory is intrinsically linked to the composition of the prose Edda. And without one, we never would have gotten the other. But he is a menace He is a madman. He is such an absolute chaos gremlin. And I didn't even get to touch on his serial philandering leading to having 6 different sons by like 4 different women, all of whom turned on him when it became the War of the Starlings.
Okay.
It's such a nightmare of a chronology to deal with. And it's amazing that this man, the biggest menace in Icelandic history, is its most famous author of all time.
Here's my pitch for when they eventually run out of English royal family to make TV shows about. The Sturlasung.
Oh, no.
I think that could be great. You've got 6, I don't know, hunky Scandinavian dudes who are like, our father is a monster attempting to undercut the Icelandic sovereignty. We must quest to defeat it. I don't know what the plot is. But, like, my point is, that's some, like, peak Game of Thrones shit right there. And the fact that Snorri's at the heart of it, and at the same time, he's composing this foundational text, I think it could be fun. I wouldn't watch it because of who I am as a person, but I hope they make it.
It would be a mess. Adam, who Ludo History kindly checked over my script and offered some pointers and clarification, including telling me about the thing with Völuspá and the Ragnarok story being quite firmly pre-Christian, go figure, that the reason Snorri was so bad at his job after he came back from Norway and then was trying to rouse the Goðar in Iceland to his cause, to go serve Iceland up to the King of Norway in a silver platter, is because he was too distracted by importing French wine via Norway.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Why is he like this?
He just wanted to go home and live the good life and hope that no one would bother him, so he really did not put in as much work as he probably should have.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm taking credit for the phrase Grima Wormtongue Grind Set.
Yes, as
which
you
I
should.
Did. Yeah, yeah. Because when you were explaining this to me, where he was like, I'm going to get in good with King Hakon IV and it'll be great. We'll be buds and he'll let me rule Iceland. And we're going to have sleepovers and talk about gods and it's going to be fun. And I just got such a clear image in my head of like, yes, my liege, Iceland will soon kneel before you.
Basically.
Leave it all in my hands. Just,
yeah. Oh.
What a nightmare of a man.
Such a mess. He's a menace.
God.
It of course was hilarious putting it together. Obviously, I had so much fun, but God, what a nightmare of a human to deal with. The like, what if Shakespeare personally started the War of the Roses is, I think, all too apt a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But on the subject of phrases we variously contributed to the script, I have to
call out.
And not apologize for Iceland's agony is our swagony. Because I had to find, like, what's a way to say their pain is our gain way stupider? And it was, like, agony? Ah, what else? Swagony.
Swagony.
Yeah, and I'm not going to explain myself even in the post video credits crawl.
No.
Let's go.
Certainly not.
So,
God.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I got to become my worst self making this video, as much of a bastard as Snorri was.
Yeah.
I had a blast.
Briefly possessed by his ghost or something.
Yeah. Because really what happened was I had done all our research and I had a whole bunch of notes on stuff. And we were taking a walk and I was explaining to you, like, how much of a whack job he ended up being with so many consequences. Because, like, we've known who Snorri is. Like, oh, that untrustworthy scamp. Oh, he was involved in politics or something.
It's like, he wrote shit. It's all we have, but there are large red flags in it that makes me not trust it and wish I could corroborate it with another source, but there are no other sources. And that's the kind of thing that just fosters resentment right out the gate, where it's like, damn it, Snorri, why can't I trust you? And then you look at his fucking resume and you're like, oh, that's why.
Yeah. There's, of course, the craziest thing in Snorri is the Trojan Aesir, which is on its face just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on, what the hell are you doing? We, of course, are able to figure out it doesn't really have much bearing on the rest of the myths, and a lot of that inspiration came from before Snorri. There's one text called the Islendiska Book, which is basically a long chronology and like ancestral lineage list, which traces all the way back to Freyr, king of the Turks.
Oh, sure.
Which is so stupid.
Freyr is like elf lord, right? Is that implying that Turks are elves?
I'm sure the metaphor falls apart immediately on closer inspection.
Yeah, why was I like, what's the precise world building details of their...
It, mercifully, it truly doesn't go anywhere, but it's so goddamn funny.
Yeah.
It's the fascinating tapestry of mythology is it is nowhere near as clean as we'd like it to be. That is a lot of the peril, some of the fun. But when it's funny, it's pretty freaking hilarious.
Yeah, and in this specific case, it's funny. It's so funny, this man is just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Who accidentally became famous for essentially his, like, pre-takeover propaganda leaflet that he was trying to, like, distribute around to be like, you see, we're all in this together. Just us Scandinavian buds hanging out under the same gods that aren't gods. We swear. Thanks, Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and then he gets too busy being fucking schwasted and banging in order to actually do his, like, conquest. And then, what, he gets assassinated later because he did such a bad job Grima Wormtonguing?
Yeah, he tried to ally with the king's duplicitous regent in a moment where it seemed like he was getting the upper hand, but Hakon was able to bring it back together, kill Skooli, and then it was like, I'm gonna kill Snorri.
Nothing is a better phrase than duplicitous regent.
Yeah.
God.
Ain't that the way? They always are, I tell you, they always are.
Someday I hope to be a duplicitous regent.
Just imagining, like, a stand-up routine. Guys, I mean, what's the deal with all these duplicitous regents out here? It's like, what's a guy gotta do to get a regent that's not gonna try to stab you in the back?
I tell
you,
I had a regent back in the day, and that man was duplicitous.
Get new material! I'm a king, it's the only thing I deal with! Yeah. That's,
I had to keep replacing my pajamas, because he kept stabbing them in the night. The budgetary restrictions caused the peasants to revolt, and then they were calling me the bad king. Duplicitous regents, man. You can't trust them.
Anyway, I'm the victim. I'm sure that if Snorri was to write his autobiography, he would make it abundantly himself the victim.
Oh, God. Yeah. I would love to see. We were just in, like, a bookstore where the entire wall of biographies was just, like, black and white photograph of the author looking towards camera. Black and white photograph of the author looking towards camera. Ooh, old black and white photograph of the author looking towards camera. I would love to see Snorri's, like, tell-all biography where he's just like looking towards the camera in that one pose he is in all the woodcuts,
sulking.
He looks so miserable every fucking time.
I love the chibi you drew for him.
I like the edit you did where he has laser eyes.
Yeah,
just that. It's just so good.
Great. Great stuff. On the subject of Norse myths, though, we've got some good stuff coming up next. I'm not going to spoil what the myth is, but we will have two new pins to go along with it.
I will spoil it. Loki does something bad.
Great. Fantastic. And if you're patrons, you know what's up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have a new pin pack for Freyr and Freya, an excellent pair of designs by Red, if I do say so myself.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for those. They're going to go up next Friday from time of upload. And that's all we got. It was a good week. Thank you for coming by the PAX. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Appreciated that a lot.
All right.
And thanks to the random person on the street who came up to us the other day and said, holy fuck, Red and Blue from Overly Sarcastic Productions, and like nearly dropped her coffee.
Oh,
that was pretty funny.
That was very funny. It's been a good week for us.
It's a good week. It's a good week.
All right. Yeah. But now I think Q&A portion?
Q&A portion. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to the Q&A portion of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast, where we answer your questions from Ask OS Pod on Discord. But before we get to those, this is our 90th episode, and as it is one of the multiples of five, I believe that means it is time for our one technically planned recurring segment, the Lightning Round.
I'm so ready for the Lightning Round!
We are going to be going through one of the literal thousands of pieces of media. I have it in a little Excel spreadsheet. It's my white whale. But literal thousands of pieces of media that you guys have submitted to us and asked if we have seen, read, watched, played, experienced in any way. And as quickly as possible, thus the name Lightning, are going to say if we have seen, watched, read, experienced in any way possible that thing. So without further ado, we'll jump in with our first one, the Oh Hellos.
No, I don't know what that is.
I think it's a band, but I don't know that I've listened to anything from them.
I was thinking of the John Mulaney special with him and Nick Kroll, which is very different.
Very, very different. Spy Family, Spy X Family.
Yes.
I know people are divided on the X convention riddle.
I haven't caught up on the manga, but I read through all of it up to one point, and it looks extremely cute, and I'm glad people are having fun. It's definitely one of those slow burns where it's like, it's slice of life, but there is a threat of eventually having a plot. And I'm like, that's cool. Please tell me when you do the plot. I would love to know what the plot will be.
I've also tangentially heard about it. Someone a friend of mine texted me the other day and said, I just started Spy Family. It's great, like you said it was. And I'm like, I've never seen that before.
New phone, who dis?
Don't you put
New
that phone? Evil on me.
Yeah. Yeah, just, I know so many pieces of media. Don't make me know more of them. This next one, XU Calamity. Exandria Unlimited Calamity.
You liked it a lot.
I liked it a lot. Yeah. 4 episodes is the right number of episodes of Critical Role for me to experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that they just let Brennan traumatize the cast.
I like how they kept giving Travis outs for being like, are you okay with dying in a dramatic and cathartic fashion? He was like, no, I'm surviving this. And he was right.
We liked XU Calamity, I think, is the takeaway.
Yeah.
Jacob Geller.
He's great.
Yeah.
I love his videos. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of really good ones. We referenced his Sony Changed Fate, Then Did It Again with God of War, I think is what it's titled. Basically comparing God of War 2 to Ragnarok. Really, really interesting video.
Did he do that series of like The Fear of...
Yes, he did The Fear of videos. Yeah, those
I
really are great.
Those. I think I have a comment on one of them somewhere.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I also really liked his... the light in Tears of the Kingdom and talking about how it's expressionist art design.
Wow.
Where it doesn't look like how light looks, it feels like how light feels.
Very cool.
He's got good ass videos. He's one of those like longer form video essayists where it's like, this man knows his shit.
Mm-hmm.
2017 DuckTales.
Yes, it's good. Everybody should watch it, including the people on this call.
I didn't watch the original DuckTales. Don't make me watch new DuckTales.
I was like not born yet. But it's got David Tennant, it's got Catherine Tate, it's got Lin-Manuel Miranda in a good fucking role. People need to stop bullying that man.
Okay.
It's so good. Don Cheadle is in it for a little while.
Is this another one of the blue characters of the 90s that Ben Schwartz has played in his
Yes, tenure? Yeah, Dewey Duck. Excellent. Is, I think, oh he was God. The first one he got under his belt.
Magic the Gathering.
Nah.
No.
I've tried a couple times.
The Unsleeping City, another actual play.
Yes,
fucking love The Unsleeping City. Best Dimension 20 seasons to date. Mm-hmm. I would die on that hill. Wings of Fire, a book.
No.
Don't know what that is.
BBC's Merlin.
Sorry, go ahead.
A friend of mine was really into it in high school, and she was like, oh, you should totally watch it. The first season's bad. The second and third season are bad. Fourth season is not good. Fifth season is bad. And I was like, what part of the show should I watch? And then I just didn't watch it.
Watch the clips online of Merlin being funny out of context for 5 minutes.
I think I watched the first season of the show, and I remember liking it a lot as a tween to teen, and then I never got around to watching any more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Witch Hat Atelier.
No, I've heard of it. Hmm? I haven't watched it.
Nah,
I've heard it's very pretty. CJ the X, another YouTuber.
Don't think so.
CJ the X. I know CJYA, or CJYA, but...
Don't think so. Hmm?
Zachary Ng and the Dragon Emperor.
Oh,
Sheeran's other book series.
Yeah, I haven't read it, but I've seen them post about it, and it looks very cool.
Yeah. The Priory of the Orange Tree.
Oh. We've got a friend who's like, you should definitely read it. It's like 1,000 pages long. So I already made a concession to that friend by reading The Historian on his recommendation. I don't have Priory of the Orange Tree in me also right now.
Megamind.
Yeah, the first one's good. I've heard the second one is bad and shouldn't exist.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Yeah. The Disastrous Life of Psyche K.
No, I know about it. It's an anime.
I enjoyed it. Okay. I watched the first season. It was pretty funny.
It seems cute.
Yeah.
There was like that whole era of like slice of life stories about extremely powerful psychic kids, and then Mob Psycho 100 completely blew the curve and just ruined it for everybody else.
Bluey.
No, I am not a child, but I'm glad people are enjoying it.
Nor a parent.
Yes, that too.
Having to babysit a lot of younger cousins and just being a frequent babysitter, I really appreciate that Bluey is a step above like your Paw Patrols and shit. So
right.
I'm happy that it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nimona.
Yes, it's good. Everybody should watch it. I love that on the Netflix banner it now says Oscar nominated.
Nice.
It's what it deserves.
It's very good. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Night in the Woods.
No, that's a game, right?
Is that a board game?
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be.
Yeah, I haven't played it. It's got a fun little conceit. You play in a dark room and there's like a little lamp and you move stuff. It's cute, but I haven't played it.
Yeah.
Kill 6 billion demons.
Yes, I've been reading it for years. I understand about 20% of it. And the art is gorgeous. It's probably one of the most beautifully illustrated webcomics I've ever seen.
Better than Scurry?
Differently good.
Okay.
Scurry at times looks photorealistic. Kill 6 Billion Demons is unbelievably stylized. This is a person who's watched a lot of anime, but didn't get a single How to Draw Anime book, and has just done something all their own. They also, it's the art for Lancer. I think they just made the game Lancer. So it's like giant mechs, giant monsters, hugely devastating energy attacks, some lesbians, pretty nice. Anyway, it's good comic.
Elvis, the 2022 movie.
No. Biopics aren't really my thing.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite Baz Luhrmann movie by a long shot, but I appreciated it for what it was. Also, okay. It's so incredibly funny. The longer Austin Butler cannot stop doing the Elvis accent, the funnier it gets.
That's pretty hilarious. Oh, I've seen the clips of him before and after. He's in the sauce, and he's not getting out.
That movie did something to that boy.
No. We need to get a vocal coach in to un-vocal coach him.
Venture Bros.
No.
April and the Extraordinary World.
No.
Sounds like a kid's book.
Yeah.
Roadside Picnic.
I have never had one. No.
it's got authors listed, so I'm going to assume book.
Got it.
No.
Muppets Most Wanted.
Weirdly, no. Muppet Treasure Island, Muppet Christmas Carol, and Muppet Family Christmas were my trio of Muppet movies as a youth.
Haven't seen them.
I feel like I watched Muppets Most Wanted in college at some point, but I think I watched a bunch of Muppets movies all at once, and so they do sort of blend together a little bit.
Right.
The Silo series.
Nope.
No.
First I've heard of it.
Sea Beast, the movie.
Yes, it's good. My favorite thing about it is it came out kind of at the same time as Our Flag Means Death, and the main character kind of looks like Steed from Our Flag Means Death, yeah. But buff and really competent. So everyone was like, this is a story Steed would be telling about himself.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's good cross media.
The Ace Attorney games. I love these games.
I haven't played them.
I like the one that's like steampunky Victorian. That was a fun conceit.
I know that Miles and Phoenix are boyfriends and that Herlock Sholmes is a canonical character. Other than that, I got nothing.
They're very silly and I can play about like 2 days straight of them and then I'm like, I gotta not touch these games for a while because it's just...
Oh no.
Cause I don't even get sucked into it. It's just like, I'm done with this now. I'll pick... It's like The Sims, you know? I'm like, I'm gonna play this for 48 hours straight and then I'm not gonna touch it again for a year. A calendar year. Yeah. Thor, Love and Thunder.
Unfortunately.
I have not.
Probably smart.
Yeah.
It's got some good bits. Anyway.
Rebel versus the Illuminati.
Real quick, I was going to say, when the one thing is like, the funniest part of the movie is the goats, and I'm like, that's not the win you think it is, gang.
He actually says the phrase, right behind me, isn't he, at one point. And when I got that clip for a trope talk, all the comments were like, fucking seriously, man?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Indigo. What was that last one?
Rival Rebel versus the Illuminati by Rodolfito.
Nope. First up, heard of it.
And to bring this to a close, we got Seinfeld.
No.
No.
I watched a bunch of Seinfeld all in order when I first moved to New York and then had a series of the plots of episodes happening to me in real life, so I'm going to...
Yeah.
Yikes.
I've seen like clips of Seinfeld, you know, Soup Nazi and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then I was made to watch by context of being in a room where I couldn't really go anywhere else. This was in Florida. an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm like, I don't like this for the exact same reason.
Yeah.
I think they're funny enough, but you know,
I can see where the humor is. It just was not for me.
Yeah. That's fair. If you don't like a sitcom humor, you shouldn't be watching a sitcom. But that is the end of this installation of the lightning round. We'll be back in 5 episodes with another one. And in the meantime, let's jump into our regularly scheduled questions. This first one coming from one of our lovely patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, support the channel, consider becoming a patron for a chance to have your question read first in a future episode. This one comes from Fish Hemsworth. To all, I work at a grocery store, so I'm obligated to ask, when you are done using a shopping cart, where do you put it?
Oh, back.
Back, yeah, right? Yeah. Don't be a fucking monster. Put your cart back.
Yeah, holy shit. We were talking about like another version of the shopping cart test the other day, and I completely forgot what the context was, but it is truly such a useful barometer of like, will you do the one thing that helps everyone but yourself and takes effort because it is the right thing to do? You gotta. You gotta, every time you gotta.
Mm-hmm. It never occurred to me that it would be considered an insurmountably difficult challenge to walk a thing across a parking lot and then walk back across the parking lot.
Yep. And especially when the parking lots have those checkpoint cart drop areas up. It's like, come on.
Well, this next question comes from Alia the Lee to Blue. I work at Lucky Brand. Just wanted to say sorry for the discontinuation of the Slim Straight. It's been well noted as a customer complaint. Also, to all, glad to hear you like the jeans. Not really a question, but I felt like it was important to shout this out. Not sponsor.
That's amazing.
A celebrity in our comments.
I've never felt so seen, being one of many angry people. No, not
so easy to cold email them, you guys.
No,
well, now that we've got an in, we can't just cold you. That'll put us right at the front door.
Shout out to Lucky Brand. Amazing. Jeans,
this is the best, not a question, more of a comment that we will ever get on this show.
Amazing.
Pandering to us now.
More boot cuts, please. All right, thank you.
Well, this one actually is a question from the Ashen One. To all, since the trope talk was on noodle incidents, what are your favorite uses of the trope? I grew up reading the Calvin and Hobbes books, and the noodle incident was one of my favorite running gags. So what's one of your favorite instances of a noodle incident?
I'll have to think of something aside from Kato and Imodia, because I did really like that one in episode 3.
Yeah. Almost all of them went into the video for me. Yeah. So I am quite fond of the way they do them in Leverage. I didn't really want to focus too strongly on it, because, again, I kind of try and not do a lot of the softball answers on myself, and there's so many of them in Leverage, because the thing is, it's often kind of a binary switch if a story has a ton of noodle incidents or no noodle incidents at all. DuckTales 2017 is a really good example of a show that has a ton of noodle incidents, because they will just be like, between episodes, we are also going on adventures. And I threw in one in the video, I think, where it's like, oh, we've become rulers of an ant kingdom. And Huey's like, that did happen twice last month. And it's like, I don't remember those episodes, but it's a noodle incident. And Leverage is the same way, where it'll be like, all these characters have complicated backstories. Shit has just happened to them. They do a lot of stuff between episodes. Sometimes you get episodes where it's like, we've just finished a job and we're about to get on the airplane back home, but now we have another job to do in the confines of this airport, and all the references to the unseen adventure are like, Hardison doesn't have any of his equipment because his laptop fell off this boat while somebody was having a fist fight with a mercenary, and it's like, cool, that's crazy. You know, noodle incidents.
That's fun.
And it's not even like a specific one. I think the one that I think is funny, because it also turned into a brick joke, is that 8 years after Leverage ended, they gave us Leverage Redemption. And in the first series, there's a joke that one of the characters at one point stole the Stanley Cup and replaced it with a forgery, but she can't remember where she put it. And then in Leverage Redemption, it's revealed that the party thief stole it from her, and that's why she can't find it. And that's why the whole time. And the funny thing is, I remember that detail, but not where it was from. So I was watching through that episode, and I was like, when's it going to mention that Parker stole it from her? And they didn't mention it, but there were a few points where she was like, yeah, I don't know where I put it. And Parker's just in the background, like, tee hee hee. And I was like, they planned it. I know it.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's amazing.
Good show.
I don't think I'll have anything that compares, because that's pretty great. I'll double back to Kato and Imodia.
Great. Fantastic.
This happened to me. I got noodle incidented because on Rolling with Difficulty, all of my fellow cast members made a separate group chat. Because when you go to the Feywild in D&D, you have to roll to see if you remember that you were there. And I had very low wisdom, so I failed this roll the first time we did it in the session. And at some point, off mic, everyone else decided to not tell me that they're like, at some point we went back to the Feywild, and also Sophia still doesn't remember it, because she doesn't remember the second time. And I just keep getting, I don't know if this really technically even counts, but just, getting smacked in the face with, what do you guys mean we went a second time?
Yeah.
The coordination it took to do a bit at me.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a fun one.
Oh, man.
Because you keep failing the roles, so we're always like, man, what a meaningful adventure we just had. You're like,
we went once that I know
of.
Why
did we move slightly? Yeah.
Wow.
So good. Forgot that bit.
Yeah. Noodle incidences are an excellent tool for comedic relief in your TTRPG.
I do actually remember at one point we were joking about, between seasons, because there was a little 8-month time skip after season 1, we were like, what if we just did Curse of Strahd between seasons?
Yeah, what if we
seasons?
Just, offhandedly referred to, the Barovia incident or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, that was proposed, but I think we got shot down.
I don't know if we got shot down or we just all collectively forgot about it because stuff was happening. But yeah, a lot of good noodle incidents out there. This question comes from Sasha. To all, what is your spice tolerance?
Bad.
We learned this earlier today. We went to a lovely local Thai restaurant that I'd been to once before, and I wanted to take Red and Cyan. And shit was spicy, gang. I had to ask for a glass of milk for the table.
Yeah.
It was that bad. I mean, it was goddamn delicious. Holy shit. It was rough.
It wasn't bad. It just lingered. And, like, there's a specific kind of spicy that also has a really bitter flavor, and it lingers as long as the spicy does. So it's like, not only am I in pain, anything I try to use to wash this down is going to mix with that flavor frequently in a very unpleasant way. So yes, I am a huge baby about spice, as befits the stereotypes.
I very much subscribe to the Frost from Second Wind school of spice, where it's like you have raw spice mm-hmm. level and then flavor.
Yeah.
And you get more flavor by adding spice, but you can have spice that's just pain for mm-hmm. no reason. And a lot of I don't want to lump all like American style food into a basket, but like Southeast Asia has this shit down mm-hmm. for an example. There are other places that do it well, but I am most familiar with Southeast Asian cuisine, really knowing how to just elevate the taste of stuff with spice strategically, perfectly. So if it's like, if I'm eating Thai food, like I'm gonna be willing to go harder on the spice, knowing that it's gonna make the flavor that much better. Whereas if it's mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm getting American food and I can make it spicy, it's like, this is just gonna taste painful,
yeah,
but not better.
It's like those novelty hot sauces that are like 100,000 Scovilles, and it's like,
yeah.
Dude,
yeah, that
there yeah. are more efficient ways to inflict pain on yourself.
Yeah.
As the noted bitter fan of the podcast, I do like pretty spicy food, but I feel like for similar reasons, like I've eaten a lot of East Asian and Southeast Asian food, so like that, like mala chili kind of spice, I handle really, really well. And then you give me like Southern United States cuisine, where it's a little bit more like pepper based, I'm like, oh, I'm not as good at handling. Like, I can eat pretty yeah. spicy food, but it's like, it's not the same, you know.
It's different.
Yeah. But I think I have a pretty high spice tolerance for someone who grew up mostly eating like pasta.
Well, also there's a bunch of different kinds of spice. Like for a while I had the party trick. It's like, I can just eat wasabi and it doesn't really bother me, because if you hold it in your mouth for, you know, like a few seconds, the spice kind of mm-hmm. you know, shoots its shot, and then it's fine, and then you can just swallow it and it's fine.
Yeah, I do that with like a Sichuan like mala spice, where it's like that numbing spiciness. Because like you eat like the first bite, you're like, oh, spicy, and then the second bite, you're like, my mouth is numb now. So it's all one unique flat go to.
Yep.
I'll refer back to the one time I was feeling under the weather, and I called my local Thai restaurant, best one in town, and I was like, hey, I need something a little stronger today. I'm feeling a little stuffy. I want to try to, you know, like clear myself out. And they're like, okay, we got you, buddy. Usually you order a medium. We have 5 levels of spice. 3 is the highest you can go without pain. And I know I've told this before, but I have to just bring it back up again, that there is not only a pain level of spice, there are 2 distinct different levels of pain spice that they let you choose between. Where it's like, there's mild, medium, hot, Thai hot, and just, you're gonna die.
Oh, man.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, this next question comes from Thongler Wielder. To Blue, who is your favorite The Great?
The Great. Who's my favorite? Not Alex, because that's not his name. I mean, obviously, what are we talking about here? Let's see. Cyrus the Great immediately is like actually pretty goddamn cool.
Did Houdini ever go by The Great Houdini or something?
If I look up The Great, I just get that show. Oh, yeah. Where everyone's fucking.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
See if Houdini might see it. See if there's a Great Houdini.
No, I googled
famous people called The Great, and that was a much more direct search.
Hold on. We're looking. Constantine the Great. Okay. King Canute the Great, Darius the Great, Cyrus the Great, yeah.
124 more, hell yeah.
Oh, Alfonso the Third of Asturias. Get the fuck out of here, Alfonso.
Ahsoka.
Yeah, Ahsoka the Great, Mauryan Emperor of India, that's a good one. I'm going to stick with Charlemagne? Yeah, fine. I'm going to stick with Cyrus, because that's a great choice. Justinian, he was called the Great?
No, Fluellen the Great? How many of these pages have you already visited?
A lot of stuff shows up when I'm doing research. Some of these people are not, like, colloquially called the Great.
Oh, Thutmose the Third.
Yeah.
We love that guy, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Cyrus. A lot of these other people are calling themselves the Great.
Go down. Like... Somebody there was called Scorpion.
Scorpion?
Scorpion the Second.
King of
Whoa!
Thinness.
3000 BC.
Oh, that's southern Egypt. Okay. That's like
Scorpion
that's pre-dynasty Upper Egypt.
Click on it. I want to see Scorpion
Billy
the Great.
Know.
I love
King
your...
Scorpion.
I love
this
you guys
is the Scorpion
for...
King.
King Scorpion. He's real.
I love
and does
this
not look too similar
research,
to Dwayne the Rock
really probably should focus back into the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Cyrus. Answer is Cyrus. All these other people are just kind of whatever.
Excellent.
I remember you, King Scorpion. That's okay. More Scorpion King for me.
Good God.
Well, this next question comes from Dorian Gay. To all, I was thinking about starting freelancing, and I was wondering if you had any tips on getting started. For context, I'm a recent marketing graduate. So we all work for ourselves to various degrees. Do we have any tips for anyone looking to freelance?
I'm not sure how helpful my advice can be, because
Our advice is 8 years out of date.
Well, also, this is the thing I was doing at the same time I was doing high school and college, and then by the time I graduated, it had sort of ballooned to the point where it was a thing I could do to make a living. But, like, that's not the same thing as working freelance. It's just making art in a way that fucking worked somehow.
Yeah, there's a difference between, like, I'm going to start doing this thing freelance as my job versus what we did, which is we have... otherwise occupied ourselves with school and this is a hobby that stayed as a hobby until it was ready to level up and become something more than that. We weren't relying on it to turn profitable.
Yep.
We weren't constructing it in such a way so as to ramp up our business strategy and yada yada yada. So it is very different when you're just starting, like, let's get into it. It's still doable. A lot of people make it work, but it is different from how we did it.
Yeah,
so.
I will say, as someone who is currently and does do freelance work and had to make the conscious decision to go freelance, I kind of have, like, two big pieces of advice. Mm-hmm. One is, before you ever get into freelancing, look up the tax laws for where you live and understand how freelancer taxes work, because they're not just a thing that automatically happens the way it does when you have a W-2 paycheck-based gig. And even if you're, like, a contract worker, this is worth doing, because you're going to need to do, if you live in the United States... estimated taxes are a thing that you're probably going to have to pay, and it's not just federal, it's federal, state, and your city, depending on where you live, so it's always just worth, like, sitting down and doing really, really boring research for, like, an hour one day, and be like, how does the tax code affect me if I am a freelancer? But the really, like, sit down for an hour and Google advice I would have for someone looking to go freelance, because I love working freelance, and there's definitely a lot of benefits to it, but it is kind of inherently more challenging than when you are onboarded onto a new job and someone guides you through the steps. If you are a recent graduate, I would recommend, you know, start building up your freelancing client base, do some freelance work on the side, but maybe look into working for a year or two as a contractor or an employee of an existing company. That's what I did when I graduated, and I found it incredibly helpful. I got a year and a half under my belt at a production company. I was able to learn a lot of professional skills that hadn't been communicated to me in my college degree by working with just these more experienced producers and editors. I got a lot of experience with things like invoicing and how to cold email people and how to work with a client. And that's just, like, something that I would not have known how to do on my own. And I found that incredibly valuable. Plus, you get a nice steady paycheck for a while, which can help give you a bit of a buffer for when you do decide, hey, I'm ready to freelance full time. You have a little something to fall back on. And it's kind of similar to how you guys, you know, started this as a hobby in college. And then when it was ready and mature and you were ready for it, were able to move to it full time. You know, this comes with the caveat, of course, the job market is incredibly difficult right now. I would suggest that you do freelance on the side on top of any job that you're doing. I was working freelance for you guys and for other clients while I was working for this production company. And it can be, when you do get to go freelance, it feels extremely exciting because now you've like built up to this thing and you get to do what you want to be doing all along. But it's, yeah, I think even if the goal is eventually work freelance full time, I would really encourage people to look into a step up to that just to get that work experience.
Yeah. And that's a really great strategy of basically spending some time working in an environment where you are going to be building the skills that you'll be using mm-hmm. for freelance, but in an area with a safety net where it's not all on you. You mm-hmm. have other coworkers around you who can help you, who can teach you. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't, you know, want that as the end goal, that can be a very straightforward and in many ways safe mm-hmm. way to start practicing that. So it's not like, all right, I'm freelance, this either works or I'm screwed.
Yeah.
It's a great jumping off point. That's a really good piece of advice, Indigo.
Yeah, and it let me like build up my client list on the side too. Like, did I have a 6-month period where I was ungodly busy because I was trying to do nearly full-time freelance work and my full-time job?
Yeah.
But then when I quit my full-time job and went freelance full-time, I had enough clients that liked me and knew my work to fall back on, to be like, okay, great, I can build this thing up. I'm not going to be just like cold emailing people all day, every day to try and build up that client base. So it's definitely something to think about. we got...
Good luck, though.
Yeah, I mean, good luck.
Sure.
All the power to you. Love... Team freelancing over here. Love that shit.
Yeah.
I really hope, fingers crossed for you, hope everything goes great, and congratulations on finishing your degree. Godspeed. Sorry, Ziggy just knocked something off of a shelf. Hey, bud, don't do that. All right, well, this next question comes from Death Ray Man to all. In episode 76, Red said that people entangle themselves in your life in inextricable ways, and Blue responded by saying, "Now I'm wondering what kind of plant I am. Going off of this, what plants do each of you think you are?"
Huh.
I'll be an olive tree.
Yeah.
I'll stay on brand. Fuck it.
Well, now I'm showing my ignorance of different kinds of plants. I do think tree is gonna win.
Tree's
but, like,
pretty good.
What tree? Well, because I was always big into the concept of, like, what if you extrapolate the concept of a dryad? It's like, what if you designed different spirits for, like, different trees, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, Christ, this is a hard one.
That is a hard one.
It's like a pop quiz. How much ecology do you know?
Do you know
math
plants?
Nerd slash literature nerd?
Austin, help.
Yeah, I don't like humidity, so, like, a fern is probably out. And I don't really like being too warm either, so, like, a cactus is probably out. So just going by, like, a temperate climate in general, I'm looking at, like, a pine tree, maybe. Some sort of ivy. Ooh, you know what? It could be fun to be an ivy and be, like, going all up a building.
Yeah, that could
that
be pretty
be
cool.
Very slowly
being
ripping it apart. Yeah.
There are a few structures that do not look better with the addition of ivy.
Especially when they start falling apart because of it.
Time.
Ruin speedrun any percent.
It's a long-term beautification strategy.
Or like
it's
one of those decorative lettuces that they put in like planters on the streets of major cities. You guys know these things? The like colorful lettuce heads that'll go in like planters in like New York.
Oh yeah, I've seen those. Yeah, they're cute. For the sake of hair aesthetic, a willow.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay.
Sweet. Well, we got time for, I think, one last question here. This one comes from Wolfheart to Red, Blue, and Indigo. Which one of you is the sorcerer, the warlock, and the wizard of the group?
Oh, I'm diagnosing you with wizard.
Yeah, I'm going to say right now, Blue, 100% you're the wizard of the group.
Hundo.
You're sitting in your library. This is wizard-coded as fuck.
It is.
Okay, Indigo, of the two of us, which of us is born with power and which of us bargains for it?
I do work for clients, so by my very nature, I do feel like Warlock is sitting staring me in the face.
I love it. Great. I'm assigned sorcerer at birth.
Ironically, we slot pretty easily. Please, this is going to be the fan art on my desk by Monday for this podcast. Draw the three of us as, you know, the class art that you would get if you opened up the player's handbook or the and it's like, this is Warlock and it's just me, or like, this is Wizard and it's Blue and his little library and all that jazz. That's your assignment, audience. That's your homework
I'm
for this
the
podcast.
Nepo baby of the magic world. Hell yeah. Like, yeah, great grandpappy fucked a dragon somewhere along the line, and now I can shoot fire out of my nostrils. Crazy, right? Man, that other stuff sounds like hard work, though.
Oh, man.
It's like, yes, I've dedicated myself to study that has nothing to do with why I can explode things with my mind. I just like reading sometimes.
Blue is the one who's got the most books, and so by default must build tower to contain them. You've got a familiar in the form of Cleo in many ways. I could go Pact of Death.
Yeah.
Pact of the Chain, make Ziggy my familiar, and in this way we're both satiated.
That was a fun one, yeah.
Yeah, no, that slotted cleanly. Yeah.
That was so much easier than I thought.
What kind of wizard would you be?
Easy.
Hell yeah.
Because there are too many options with tree. We could be here forever.
Yeah.
And there are so many correct options.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm showing my ignorance. Like, I'll be like, I don't know, Willow, and someone's going to actually me. Like, huh, you fool. Clearly you're not aware of the North Sub-American ficus, which is exactly you. Yeah, I don't know.
Hilarious.
Yeah, good work, gang.
Great. Well, that's the podcast, so Red, you want to take us out?
Sorcerer gang, rise up. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. Nobody cued me in to this episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another fun episode where we'll be a little bit less conned out, I think, a little bit more coherent, possibly. I shouldn't make that promise.
No one cued you in. Is it a problem having to take the initiative on your own without having someone tee it up for you, you fucking sorcerer? You amateur?
Well,
you lazy piece of trash?
You know, I'm just used to being able to pull it all off together with no prep work and no time. So, you know, I really do kind of my best work on the edge with no support and no infrastructure. Check out the Freyr and Freya pins coming soon. That'll be fun. And if you're a patron, head over there or your preferred podcast platform for your RSS feed, because we're going to be hanging out in the After Show for another 30 to 40 minutes, and that'll be fun, probably, unless I keep getting bullied for being naturally talented and able to spit fire from my mouth. I think that's everything, so until next time, I've been Red.
Get out of my library.
Cool. Teleports away.
Awesome.
Let me know when you figure this one out, wizard boy. And this has been an Only Sarcastic Podcast.
This one in your books, dumbass.
's so much for listening to this week's episode of the Overly Sarcastic Podcast. We'll be back on April 17th with another thrilling installment, but if you miss us before then, be sure to check out Overly Sarcastic Productions on YouTube. Got a question for the pod? Head over to Ask Go As Pod on Discord for a chance for your question to be featured in a future episode. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review on your preferred podcast platform, and if you really enjoyed the show, consider becoming a patron for even more exclusive benefits. Thanks for listening.